You are now listening to The Griot's Black Podcast Network, Black Culture Amplified. What's going on, everybody, and welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast for, by, and about the culture. I'm your host, Panama Jackson, and we're going to have a fun conversation today because we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, black movies. And it's 2023 in Black America, which means we have the opportunity to revisit movies that we know and love from the early 90s. And today we're going to talk about a film that celebrates, and we're going to celebrate the 30-year anniversary of a film that, is it as good as we remember? We're talking Poetic Justice here on Dear Culture.
Columbia Pictures presents a story about losing your fear and finding your way.
What do you write about?
What was in my heart.
What's that?
Janet Jackson. Tupac Shakur. Poetic Justice.
And in order to do that, I invited one of my homies, a good friend of mine, who is a New York Times bestselling author, along with being one of my friends who indulges and engages in the shenanigans when it comes to black films and black culture as much as I do. Anytime there's some shenanigans afoot when it comes to black movies and black culture, I know she's going to be there. So please put your digital hands together for my good friend, Bossy Igpe. How you doing today?
Hello, I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here. I'm always down to talk about black shit. So
I love it. And that brings us to this. I've already mentioned we're talking about Poetic Justice. I'm going to do a quick rundown of some of the film's details so we can get that stuff out of the way. It was released in July 1993, so we're right past the 30-year anniversary of this film. Written, directed, and produced by John Singleton. This is his second film, coming off of Boys in the Hood, which is an iconic film in America, but Black America especially. I'm still not over the death of Ricky Baker.
Ricky!
But this is his second film that he wrote, directed, and produced. And it stars a litany of, it's a who's who of black famous people. The main stars are Janet Jackson, who plays Justice, Poetic Justice. Justice is a poet, at least loves poetry. I don't know how good a poet she is, but she loves poetry. And it stars Tupac Shakur, coming off of Juice, his star-making turn in the film Juice.
What's up?
Janet at this time is a supernova. She's already got Control, Rhythm Nation 1814 under her belt, and Janet just came out in May of 1993. It also stars Regina King. Before we knew her as Regina King, she plays Isha, the alcoholic bestie of Justice's character, and her boo, Chicago, played by Joe Torre. It also stars like Q-Tip and Maya Campbell, Maya Angelou, Jennifer Lewis, Tone Loc is in this
Washington.
Movie.
Keith Washington.
Oh, Keith Washington.
Random.
Right. Randomly. It is random that it's Keith Washington, because I couldn't quite figure out if they could figure out what kind of character Keith Washington was supposed to be in this movie.
It was a lot edited. I didn't know.
So yeah, well, but I think we'll talk about that.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah. Real quick synopsis. And I'm going to try to do this briefly, but try to cover the bases. Justice is mourning the loss of her boyfriend, played by Q-Tip, who was killed right in front of her at a drive-in movie theater by some dudes that he had beef with the week before. I guess we're like a year later. She's still in mourning, not dating or not really seeing anybody. She works at a beauty salon. Her best friend, Isha, played by Regina King, is in there. And she's like, hey, boo, let's go on this run with my boo, Chicago. Chicago is her boyfriend who works with Lucky, who is Tupac Shakur. They make these runs with the post office up to Oakland every so often, which I can't tell if the mail only gets delivered anytime they make these runs from LA, or if this is just like a weekly thing that happens. I don't know. But they decide to make this run. On this run, Isha and Joe Torre break up in magnanimous circumstances. There's all kind of stuff. There's domestic violence. It's just so intense. Oh my gosh. It's everything that can go wrong. But in that same time, Justice and Lucky fall for each other, though upon my viewing last night, I don't think that's possible in the slightest. Unrealistic. but such is life. Anyway, they eventually, you know, they get to Oakland. Lucky's cousin got shot and killed right before they got there. He's mad. They have a falling out. Well, basically just leaves her at the hotel and doesn't speak to her again. But then he shows back up later on and he's like, my bad, boo. And she's like, yay. And then they get together, presumably. That's my quick and dirty synopsis that leaves out a whole bunch of stuff. How was my synopsis? Yeah, good, bad, ugly. How was it?
Well, the movie left out a bunch of stuff, so I would say it was a good synopsis.
I'll take that. I'll take that. And I could not agree more. So let's start with the most important question. Is this movie any good?
I don't want to say no, but I'm not going to say yes. So that's where we are.
Yeah, I remember this film more fondly than I think it deserves. I think like a lot of things from the, and I've been this has been happening to me a lot because this is controversial. I don't think Menace to Society is as good of a movie as I remember it. It used to be one of my favorite films, and now it's just like it's really not that good of a film to me at this point. And I think maybe that's because of my 2023 eyes. Poetic Justice suffers the same fate, I think.
Can I give you a hot take?
Oh, please do.
I think many of the movies, black movies from the 90s that we loved are not very good. As looking at them now, there are very few. Love Jones, I still love, but it has its problems as well. But they don't hold up as well as our memory would want them to.
Yeah, you know, I wish my daughter was a little bit older so I could like sit down and watch some of these movies with her just to get her current era take on some of these things, because I feel like she's going to be like, dude, what is this? Like, I think a lot of them are going to basically be the equivalent of Tubi movies to me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
But, you know, but this is John Singleton. This is his second film. And Boys in the Hood was like such a great film. To me, that movie was really good. I don't think it left anything on the table, where this film leaves a bit to be desired in my recollection. But we're going to get into all of that. So let's also start. Where were you when this movie came out in 1993? Like when you saw this, where were you in life and where were you when you saw it?
I am old. So I was it was between my junior and senior year of high school. So I don't know where exactly I was, but that's my time period. It was the summer between my junior and senior year. And I think, I don't know if I want to give this film credit or not, but I believe this might be where or why I started performing poetry. It might be. I don't remember. It was either this or Slam. I don't remember. But yeah. And it introduced me to Maya Angelou's poems, because I only knew her as a memoirist. So I loved it then.
I must have just turned 14 at this time. So I think this is when I moved back to America. So I'm about to start high school. I'm pretty certain I did not see this movie in theaters. I do not know when I saw this film for the first time, but I'm pretty sure I don't remember going to the movies to see this.
Me neither.
Because I can't imagine my parents would have taken me to see this movie, because I don't know that they would. Well, my dad loved Janet Jackson, though, so maybe. I don't know. I don't remember when I actually saw this, but I probably did not see this in theaters. But this movie did become a part of, like, my life significantly by the time, like, in college. One of my best friends from college loved this movie. Like, he loves it now. When I'm rewatching it, I'm texting him like, dude, plot holes everywhere. And he's like, man, you're crazy. This is great. So, you know, this did become a part of my life. Upon rewatching it, did anything stand out to you? What do you remember differently about it than watching it again? You know, aside from it being better, when in your mind being a better movie than it might be now.
I thought that the love story between poetic between Justice and Lucky had more substance to it. I really thought that I remember watching them fall in love and like the way that she slowly melted and he, you know, all this stuff. I really had an arc in my mind where the love story was much more prominent and made much more sense. I did not see that here.
Yeah. Same thing. I was watching and I was like, there's no way that by the time they get to Oakland, which this is really just a day drive that they're making. They're making a drive and I guess leaving in the morning and getting there in the evening, kind of, sort of. This really doesn't lend itself to them. I didn't get that from this, from their interactions. Like, I almost didn't believe that they would have liked each other at all. You know,
because she was a specific kind of cold to him that I'm like, you can't fix that in a day. And I don't know. And you know what? Another thing that got me to the number of times they stopped. Like, they stopped for a barbecue, they stopped for a carnival. I was like, really? Just drive. Like, just get there.
That comes up in my little, like, things that stood out to me later. But so in response to you saying the type of cold she was to him, his responses to her were not the kind of things that you get over in a day either.
Oh, so you one of them angry bitches, huh?
A feminist.
What'd you call me?
Said you a mean bitch.
We gotta stop this right now. You don't know shit about me, okay? Don't be calling me no bitch. You don't know nothing about me.
Like, everybody's blow-ups were not small. Everybody was so angry. Like, the anger that everybody exhibits throughout this film is not the kind of thing that thaws out over the course of a day's drive, no matter what's going on. I just don't see it at all.
Especially with people you don't know. Like, I can see it maybe with, like, you know, longtime best friend or something where you have a history. But these people just met and they're saying the worst things to each other. The amount of FUs that everybody said, there's no way they would have gotten over it by the time they got to Oakland.
Yeah, I didn't see that at all. In fact, one of the hot takes that I wrote down based on all the interactions that they had was that Kevin Samuels would have loved this movie. He must have loved this film. Kevin Samuels being the, you know, he's passed now, but known, like, we kind of viewed him as the Manosphere kind of dude who was very much like, women need to know their place and worth and all this. And like, the amount of the word bitch and hoes that was lobbed around in this film, like, I was just like, in the way that it was like, that's their business staying out of it, domestic violence and abuse kind of stuff, like, look, I'm not saying anything about Kevin Samuels in that regard, like, he was a domestic violence lover, but when I'm watching, I was like, huh, I bet he loved this movie. Like, I bet when he watched this, he enjoyed this. Like, there was a lot of be a man type stuff that was very prevalent throughout this whole movie. Very toxic. This movie's toxic.
Time for a quick break. Stay with us.
Don't forget, you can listen to the Griot's Writing Black podcast, hosted by me, Maisha Kai. This isn't your typical writing podcast. We interview any and everybody that has anything to do with writing, from comics to poets to authors to journalists to politicians and more. Remember, that's Writing Black every Sunday right here on the Griot's Black Podcast Network. Download the Griot's app to listen to Writing Black wherever you are.
And we're back. I want to talk quickly about, like, where Janet Jackson was in her life in making this movie. Because what I will say, they did a really good job of not making Janet Jackson feel like one of the biggest artists on the planet in this film. Like, when I'm watching it, I don't feel like I'm looking at, that's Janet Jackson in 93. Now, obviously, there's some distance here. But can you imagine, like, all the people that were extras at the barbecue? Like, that's Janet Jackson at this point. Like, selling 30, 40 million albums, Janet Jackson, like, one of the biggest stars on the planet. And she just seems so normal and chill and regular. You know, she just seemed like an everyday woman just out here. She's like 27 at the time, but she's lived lifetimes. Like, that really stuck out to me, like, how normal she seemed in this film. Like, did you get that impression?
I think that she seemed normal as an everyday person. I don't think she was a normal woman from South Central LA. I didn't get that. But one of the things that I noticed, like, often was how much she looked like Michael. There were certain scenes where I was they just look so much alike. And that took me out for a minute. And then I had to bring myself back. That's Janet.
I see that. I was also, I don't know that I ever really paid this much attention, but Tupac seemed like a real thin dude. Like, when he was sitting on the couch with his, like, little, you know, his, like, tank top on, I was like, man, this is like, I'm looking at somebody who's going to be dead in 3 years, number one. Somebody whose legacy will far outlive everybody else, like, becoming one of the most famous, iconic artists who ever graced this planet, who's in that rare air with the Mikes and the Michael Jacksons and the, you know, like all, like he's in the Elvises, he's in that space.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting watching him, because I'm looking, it's like he's just a regular dude too, like just a regular guy in this movie. Like I guess that's what it is. They did a good job to me of making them seem like regular people.
But can we talk about it? Can we talk about one of the things that blew me away is I was like, Tupac is an actor. Like, as much as I didn't, you know, love the movie, his performance, like there were moments when he just, I was like, oh my God, Tupac was an actor. And I was like, I'm sorry that we get to miss out, or we had to miss out on what he could do, on what could possibly have happened as far as acting goes, because I thought he was phenomenal in his roles, and yeah, especially like the emotional scenes. I believed every word, every word.
Yes. Tupac, the actor, is 100%. I agree. He's phenomenal. Like the way he acts with his eyes and his face, like, you can tell like the training that he had, like he fully gave himself into the roles that he was in. Like I'm with you. You could see it in just his performance. It was great. Like I agree.
Yeah.
Him and Regina King are the actors in this film. She was amazing in her role.
They both disappeared. Even though Regina King is as iconic as she is now, and she's like super famous, she disappeared in the role. Tupac, again, like you said, just out there as a legend icon, he disappeared in this role too. I saw Joe Torre and I saw Janet.
Yeah, I'm looking at Janet and Joe Torre the entire time. Like, especially Janet, because all I kept thinking about was how famous she really was at this time in this film. Like, I kept thinking about where she was in life at that moment, just because of how much reverence I have for the bodies of work that she, up to that point. And the fact that she had just released another multi-platinum album that's like an iconic album, not only her discography, but in like the canon of like music. Like her Janet album, I love that album so much. Like she's, you know, she's just a supernova at this time. That's all I kept thinking about when I'm looking at her. We're going to take a lot of shots at various things of this film. It's just going to happen. So, but let's start. What's good about this movie? Like, what did you enjoy about Poetic Justice?
I loved Tupac's performance. Like I said, I thought, I feel like I should have been nominated for at least a BET award or
NAACP.
NAACP. NAACP. I was like, NPCA. He should have been nominated for something, because he was phenomenal. I liked that Maya Angelou was in it. I think I loved her hair. That iconic. Iconic, the braids, iconic. Like I wanted to, everything she wore, I think at some point in high school, I also wanted or got. I dressed just like her because of this movie and the You Want This video.
Yeah, she was a look. Her look, I do remember looking at this and like, that is a look that is an iconic look from this movie, both when she had the white outfit on, like at the end of the movie, and like her
the baseball
outfit on the way there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me clarify just a little bit. There's a lot about, I think collectively, there are things about the movie that I enjoyed, but if I'm to pick it apart, it falls apart. So I can look at Tupac, I can look at Regina King, but when it comes to the story, it just left so much. I had so many questions that I can't sit here and say that I liked anything particularly, because then it falls apart when I ask another question.
All right. So what didn't you like about the story? Let's just go ahead and jump in right there. Like, what about the story falls apart for you?
Why did they do this? Why did she choose to do this as opposed to go to the caravan that Jesse offered in the beginning? Okay. Her car breaks down. Why is the only other option this mail truck? When did they fall in love? Like, when did it happen? Because she didn't even want to speak to him. And that's another thing. There's grief, and then there's whatever she was going through, because she was like mean. And I kept forgetting that it was grief. It was just like you can't say anything to this man that you're sitting next to. He's asking you questions. You don't want to talk to him. of course, he went a little, you know, fuck you then. You're not even that cute. He went there. But I don't know when they fell in love. I can't figure out when it happened. And that was a huge hole for me. And then the ending when he comes back, what's on the cutting room floor? What did we miss? What didn't we see? And then also they just stopped a lot and they didn't stop for a minute. They stopped and they had barbecue and they stopped and they went to an African festival. Like they stopped. And I'm just like, what is happening on the road between South Central and Oakland? Like, do they have these little, do they have roadside entertainment for people? Like what? I didn't understand that.
This is my biggest criticism of this movie. And it's because it doesn't like jive with the way that I remember it. Kind of like you said earlier, it's that Boys in the Hood seems so well written. Like it really seemed to check all the boxes it needed to check in order for that movie to work. I watch that movie all the time now, and I still don't feel like I'm missing. Like, there's nothing outside of like real minor plot points that I'm like, well, they did that to that. This is minor stuff. In this one, I feel like there's a lot that got left out in terms of really establishing a connection for Justice and Lucky in order for to have them like genuinely fall for each other. The way that Isha and Chicago fall apart works perfectly. Like, she becomes drunk. She's out here, you know, hollering at other dudes, and they get to the cookout, to the family reunion.
She's wilding.
She is so out of pocket. That makes sense that they would fall apart. Now, the way it happens and all the other stuff,
It made sense from the beginning when we first saw her. We knew that she was like, she's the friend that you gotta like drag out of the club. Like we saw that from the very beginning. So it made sense to the end. But just to go back, and this is the problem that I had with one of the problems I had with this movie. When you look at Boys in the Hood, you know that he took care of that film. It's his first film, which means he's probably been writing it for years, which means he's probably been, you know, like crafting it for years. And then the second film is who knows how much time he had or maybe like the studio just expected something. And I felt like the writing really fell apart because he might not have had time, as much time as he had with Boys in the Hood, to like craft it and nurture it and like, and write about something he knows. Like, I don't know what part of this he knows. Is it the poetry? Did he drive a mail truck? Like, what part of this did he connect to in order to write this film? And that was something that was hanging over my head as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Cause that's probably, I mean, you're probably right. Boys in the Hood comes out. It becomes a surprise success in how popular it was and how much it, you know, caught the cultural zeitgeist. Perhaps they were like, yo, we want another movie quickly. Like, here's a check. We need a movie. And he's like, well, I can get Janet Jackson, who I've been talking to about being in this, and Tupac, and, you know, and maybe to pull all those people in, you know, maybe he didn't have enough time with the script and it could have used a couple more passes or something like that. Cause it definitely did. I mean, I one of my notes was 100% the script. I'm texting my boy, like, the script does not work to get where they're trying to go with this movie. But it's funny though, because again, in my mind, I loved this movie. And then when I rewatched it, I'm like, how? Why did I love this movie? So maybe in my youthfulness, without all the criticisms and reviews and things that I've done over time, it was just like, wow, we got another movie that shows black love. And that's Janet Jackson. And that's Tupac on screen. And that's all that matters because, you know, we love their characters. But yeah. So
you know what else I didn't understand that something they didn't really build up, just her as a poet. It just seemed like she was writing poems and people like, read me a poem and like, read me another poem. Like, where's my poem for the day? Like, and as a former poet, I'm like, nobody, what is she doing with the poems that everyone is like clamoring for the next poem that she's written? Where's your book? Go get it. You know what I mean?
So I feel like in the 90s, we always used poetry to differentiate between the regular folks in the hood and the ones who were special, right? It was an easy way to say, I'm not like everybody else. You throw a poem out there. Love Jones did it to some degree, right? Like, it was the whole conceit of that is like, these are different types of Black people and they coalesce around spoken word poetry at the sanctuary, right? And I feel like in this movie, like, it wasn't necessary. You don't need the poetry for it, right? It doesn't add much to the film. In fact, it kind of falls off a cliff at some point. Like, she's doing voiceovers and stuff over the course of the movie, but it really didn't add that much. Like, the music they did that with added as much as the poetry did, in my opinion. Like, you know, Stanley Clark's bass and the trumpet, I mean, you know, the horns and stuff, but I'm with you. I think
the poetry also, because it was written by Maya Angelou, it just felt too old for the Justice character. Like, the things that she was writing about, like we heard in the voiceover, I was like, it just, her boyfriend just got killed. Like, why is she writing about like the willow trees or like, you know what I mean? Like, it was something that just felt like way too old for that character. And that's another thing with the dialogue. There's certain things that she said that I was like, I don't think that someone would know that. Like, she says when she's talking about her mom, she says, my mother committed suicide. Committed suicide. And I was like, wouldn't she say my mama killed herself? You know what I mean? It just felt like a little off. And then there was a scene where Tupac says, frankly, my dear, I don't give a fuck. And I was like, is Lucky watching Gone with the Wind? the little moments like that kept pulling me out because I was like, would they say that? Would that character do that?
So the funny thing is, I didn't even notice it about when Justice says that, but I love when Lucky does that. Like, that was one of my favorite parts when he says that, frankly, and he does the whole, like, all of that. Like, I bet that was ad-libbed. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he just, like, you know, because Tupac definitely watched Gone with the Wind. Tupac definitely was up on all that stuff. So I think he probably just tossed it in there. And it was so funny in the moment that they just kind of
let it go. It worked really well. I liked it. And I laughed too. But it did. I was like, that's a god. But now that you say it was probably ad-libbed, that makes much more sense than it was part of the script.
Yeah, because Tupac 100%. Knows Gone with the Wind, and Tupac probably would say that in a recording session with Dr. Dre just as much as he would say that on the film set. All right, so we're gonna take a real quick break here, and we're gonna come back. We're gonna talk about some specific parts of the movie that, like, well, specific parts in using categories of some sort to try to see if we can suss out some of the stuff here. So I'm here with Bossy Igpe talking Poetic Justice Revisited. Stay tuned here on Dear Culture.
I'm Torre. Join us for crazy true stories about stars who I really hung out with, like Snoop, Jay-Z, Prince, Kanye, and the time I got kidnapped by Suge Knight. Don't miss my animated series, Star Stories with Torre, from the Griot Black Podcast Network.
All right, we're back here on Dear Culture talking Poetic Justice Revisited after 30 years. I'm here with Bossy Igpe, and we're kind of going through Poetic Justice, which I think we both feel is not as good of a movie as we remember it, but I think that tends to be the case with a lot of art. Once you go back, you know, evolution, time, whatever it is, changes the way we look at things. And, you know, this movie has some issues, which we've been talking about. But so here's one of my favorite things to always talk about. Clifton Powell is like one of my favorite actors of all time. I don't know why I love him, but he's in all the Black movies. Clifton Powell's like IMDb list is long. So when he's not in a Black movie, I'm always surprised. Was there a role for Clifton Powell in this movie? And we could throw Vivica Fox in there too, because she shows up in a lot of movies on Tubi and Amazon that you just wouldn't expect to see Vivica Fox in. But should Clifton Powell have been in this movie?
You know what I just realized? When you said Clifton Powell, I was thinking Reverend Dr. Reuben Gregory. Yeah. That's not Clifton Powell, is it? Yeah.
No, Clifton Powell is, he's in Ray. Clifton Powell was in Menace to Society as Chauncey. He's in The Gospel. Like, I'm trying to think of the most famous movie. He's Pinky in like Friday After Next.
Man, is he usually a bad guy? Is he usually a bad guy?
Yeah, as he's gotten older, he's become more of a like father in the movie.
If he's Clifton Powell, the person that I think that he is his son dating Sasha Obama? Do I have that right?
Yes. Yes, that
okay,
is right.
Then I know who yes. he is. Then I know yes. who he is. Oh, okay. Who would he play? Keith Washington's character. There's nowhere else for him to go.
Yeah. And I had Uncle Pete or Cousin Pete. Cousin Pete. Oh, he could have been Cousin Pete.
Oh, I forgot about Cousin Pete. I love Cousin Pete, when he was like, what's going on over there? I need to go.
Right. Like, I didn't mention that's my favorite part of the film, like because of how like significantly black that is, showing up at a family reunion, ingratiating yourself with the family, and just, you know, taking your time to become one of them. Like, I was like, this is very well done. Like, I enjoy that. Even the Maya Angelou aunties with April, May, and June over there talking, and how they pinpointed that, you know, Isha and Chicago ain't married, and how they about to get, you know, like how terrible that situation was. I enjoyed that part. That's the part of the movie that I actually enjoyed.
I wish that they would. I completely forgot, but I agree. That's the part that I love too. I kind of wish they would have stayed there. I feel like I would have bought a love story in an environment like that. There was something about that scene. Well, we've talked about it. It was so black. Like it was very, what's blacker than a family reunion? You know what I mean? And some random cousins that you could just be a cousin.
Right. We got to talk about one of the most significant scene in this movie, which is the scene where Chicago hits Isha multiple times and Tupac doesn't step in. He lets them handle it because that's his business. He only steps in after what looks like Chicago gang tackles Justice. Like, I watched that and I hate to say this, but I laughed out loud because I'm like, I don't remember seeing, like, he basically just like tackled her and took her to the ground. And then Tupac gets out and then starts fighting him because I guess to protect her honor, but it's not really that clear. That scene was a bit of a mess.
Is that when they fell in love? When she felt like he protected her or something? Was that supposed to be it?
I don't know, because she was like, why don't you go in and step in? Like, your man is tripping. And he's like, nah, that's their business. I'm like, is it though? Like, you see where this is going. This is only because Isha is already volatile and she's trying to get hit. I hate to say this, but she was trying to push every button. Oh, she was trying.
I was like, can I be toxic for a moment? Because there was a pause where he kind of stepped back and she kept going and going and going. And it just like all the stuff hit him and then he hit her. And I was like, in my brief toxic moment, I was like, well, you were kind of asking for it. What do you think he was going to do? And I was like, okay, don't think like that.
She was trying. And then did the thing where she can't believe that he did it. I mean, she goes to fight back. And it's only again, Tupac's still sitting there. He's still chilling.
Yeah.
But then Justice gets out and goes over there to get between him. And then he tackles her. And that's when Tupac's like, you don't hit no woman. I'm like, but he just slapped her twice. Like that whole part, I was like, they needed to reshoot this with make it make a little bit more sense. But that's when I also was like, Kevin Samuels would have just been like, like, this is just toxic all around. Like, this whole trip. You know,
but you know what I liked? The whole thing was the whole trip was shouldn't have happened. But what I did like is when Regina King's choices, when she's going and going and going, and I think she ad-libbed a lot of that too, going and going and going, and he doesn't do anything. He's just standing there. And I think she wanted him to argue with her because she's pretty toxic too. So she wanted an argument. And then he still wasn't saying anything. So she dropped the, and I'm fucking another.
Right.
That, and that's what got it. It still was a pause before he hit her, but it's like fight with me, not fight me. I don't think it was a fight me situation. It was a fight with me because she just seemed like one of those super let's fight and then let's have makeup sex type of people or person.
Yeah. What I will say is that was one scene where Joe Torre did a good job of acting, because the look on his face when he slowly stopped brushing his hair, he put the brush away, and then he looked up and it hauled off. I was like, that was well executed. Like, that was well filmed. Like, that whole sequence right there, I was like, because we knew what was about to happen. Too.
Yeah, but he looked hurt too. Like, you could see him like being wounded by the stuff that she said, and then kind of like, and I just felt like the way that Joe Torre played it, because he took that moment, it was like, I could either walk away or do this. I don't think it was like a reflex. I think he made a choice to hit her, which I think is different, not in a good or bad way, but just like the way that it was all sinking into the character and the way that he played it.
We got to talk about one of the most important aspects of this movie. Why is this soundtrack so bad? So I don't know if you want to go back and look at the soundtrack to this thing, because so when I was like, I'm going to do this movie, I'm like, this is the era where all the soundtracks are good, if not better than the movies themselves. And they have iconic songs, or there's like a definitive song or something. So I'm like, I don't remember any song on this soundtrack. I remember like they had the music playing for Again, like, you know, kind of over through the movie. But I was like, there's no song that I associate with this movie. So I went to go look at the soundtrack. I was like, why is this soundtrack so bad? This is a horrible soundtrack for a 90s movie.
It was awful. Like, the thing that we love the most about 90s movies, for me, are the songs that stick with you. Like, I still listen to Why You Getting Funky on Me from House Party 2. That was a song. That was a soundtrack. So I was completely shocked. Like, I heard TLC, but I was like, I don't think I've ever even heard this song before.
Didn't remember it at all. Not
maybe they spent all their money. They spent all their money getting Janet, and so they couldn't. That was their budget. Their budget was Janet.
But the crazy
Jackson.
Thing is, so the movie opens up with like the most famous remix of Bonita Applebaum, which is not on the soundtrack. Like, I heard that and I was like, yo, this was my song, because this was before Biggie even used that sample for Big Papa, right? So this is like early on when this soundtrack, like that remix was amazing. And I'm like, but that's not on the soundtrack. They have like Stevie Wonder, you know, I Never Thought You'd Leave in the Summer. Like, but the I was just amazed at how bad this soundtrack was. I'm still kind of like, I might have to write an article about my surprise revisiting this, about how bad that was, because I'm just still dumbfounded by this.
You know what makes that even weirder, that it's not on the soundtrack? Why were they playing it when Q-Tip was not supposed to be Q-Tip? Like, why was that playing during his scene if it's not even in the soundtrack? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, why? And then I still don't understand why he got shot. But the guy who shot him was fine. I wrote that down. So, he's fine as hell.
Well, if you remember, the guys were like, yo, that's the dude that was talking trash the other day, whatever. And the dude was like, that's not him. That's not him. But Q-Tip, I guess his name was Markel, was looking in the mirror. Like, he recognized him. He got back in the car, was like, I just saw some dudes I got into it with last week. So they would just, this was just, I think, supposed to be kind of a nod to how insanely violent the 90s in LA were, where something like that could just literally end to your death. Because, you know, the dude, they're playing that, and that also shows you how life was viewed. They're just playing video games. They're playing video games, and then they're just gonna go do that and murder somebody and keep it moving. Like, at a place where there's tons of people to witness all of it. Without
point
a thought.
Blank, like, range. And that's, thank you for bringing that up, because I almost forgot about that. She watched her boyfriend get shot in the head at point blank range. I feel like she should have been more traumatized. I feel like it should have been more than just being mean to Lucky. Like, there was so much more that her poetry should have done or could have done. Like, it just, even again, her and Lucky could have connected on the fact that she's like, he was, I think he was like, oh, your boyfriend died, whoop-de-doo. But had she said, I was in the car and he was shot in the head, I feel like that could have like opened up some like empathy from him. And that would have been like something that would have brought them together. All of this is me trying to figure out why and how these two people ended up together.
Right. I have one more thing along those lines that really bothered me. The revelation that Lucky has a daughter should not have been that big of a deal, where she treated it like, I can't believe you didn't tell me. I'm like, you said out loud in a voiceover, he's looked like the kind of guy that got kids. But in the world that you occupy, this doesn't seem like a surprising thing. He only has one. It's not like he has like four kids. He got one kid. I was just surprised that was such a thing for her. Like, why didn't you tell me earlier? Like, this is a deal breaker? Like, I didn't understand that part.
When is earlier? Because you weren't even talking to him for the first, like, half an hour. And then, like, at what point was he supposed to say, oh, by the way, like, he doesn't owe you that because you weren't dating when you first.
They're not even dating after they have sex, really. It just happened and she's smiling. And then he's like, I got to tell you something. And I'm like, you dropping this like it's a big hammer and it's I have a kid. Like, that should kind of be like, okay, well, I'm not surprised. But the question is, like, are you with the mom? No, not at all. Yeah. My kid is living with me and my mama.
Are you in his life or in her life? Okay, cool. And can I say something that I'm actually very ashamed of?
Okay.
I didn't realize that they had sex. I thought they just hugged. Because she kisses him. No, she kisses him. Then she stands up and, like, I don't know, looks at the ocean or whatever. Then she comes back and then there's the blanket. And I was like, oh, it must be cold.
Well, if you remember, that was controversial. Right, because she wanted him to take, like in real life, Janet's people wanted Tupac to take an HIV test, and he famously refused to do it because he was we're actually going to have sex, of course I'll take all the tests that you want, but if we're just going to kiss, why do I have to take a test? Like, why do I have to take an HIV test if the most we're going to do is kiss or anything like that? So that was kind of like a behind the scenes controversy that existed that Tupac talked about.
I completely forgot about that.
On Arsenio Hall show. Because that was the same show he was talking about. I thought I had a friend for life. As soon as we finished the movie, I never heard from her again. Like, so.
Oh, I wanted to mention, too, that Janet's ex-husband was in the movie.
Yes. Renee is in the movie. I didn't realize that until I watched this last time. I didn't know that was him anyway. Like, I remember the role. I didn't realize that was Renee.
Yeah.
Do you have any last big picture thoughts about Poetic Justice before we wrap up?
I think it's a movie that's worth seeing because it's so iconic. It's part of... It's Black history. I think it's worth seeing, but I do think that it is worse seeing than you remember. But it's worth taking a look at. And I think that there's space for a remake. I think there's space for a remake, and I low key want to write it. I think there is a place that a remake could occur that kind of fixes a lot of the plot holes that we see.
You know, I actually agree with that. Like, I don't think this film is untouchable because it's got so many flaws. This definitely could be, there definitely could be another version of this that is better than the one that we got. Like, it lives large in my memory, you know, in nostalgia and all that. Like, it's Poetic Justice. And I think it's worth watching, like you said, just because of Tupac, who's no longer with us. Like, you know, it's just amazing watching, like, what a star he actually was, you know, for so many reasons. We have so many documentaries and so much stuff about Pac. But, like, watching him actually act in these movies is, like, really worth the price of admission. So I think it's worth watching for that reason. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely think people should watch it. I like the idea of remaking this film somehow. And I'm going to lobby so you can be the writer of it as soon as I get an opportunity. All right, we're going to take one more break here. We're going to come back with some Black Fessions and Black Commendations. And you know how we do here on Dear Culture. Stay tuned.
Take a ride through the 1980s via the songs that tell the history of the decade. Being Black in the 80s is a podcast docuseries hosted by me, Toure, looking at the most important issues of the 80s through the lens of the decade's songs. This is the funkiest history class you'll ever take. Join me, Toure, for Being Black in the 80s on the Griot Black Podcast Network or wherever you listen to podcasts. Available June 1st.
All right, we're back here on Dear Culture. We're here at my favorite segments of the show, which are Black Fessions and Black Commendations. We love to say that Black people are not a monolith, and, well, Black Fessions is our opportunity to prove it. So, Black Fession being a confession about your Blackness, something that people will be surprised to learn about you because you are Black. Bossy, do you have a Black Fession for us?
I do, and I'm afraid that this is going to ban me and bar me from ever being invited to Oprah Winfrey's house. I've always wanted to go to her Garden of Eden and pick cabbage with her. I feel like this is the moment that dream ends. I am not a fan of Maya Angelou's poems, her poetry. I am not a fan. I love her books. I've read all of her books multiple times. I know why the caged bird sings. Like, it just did it something to me when I read it for the first time in the fifth grade. It's still one of my favorite books of all time, but her poetry just doesn't do it for me. It's I'm not going to call it what I want to call it, 'cause I don't want people mad at me, but I just don't like it. I don't like her poetry. Love her. Love her books. Love her quotes.
That must have made this movie a thing. Because her poetry was... I didn't realize she'd written all the poetry in this movie.
All of them.
But maybe... Yeah. That's why they sounded so old. I didn't love the poetry in this movie. Yep. Yeah. Okay. I can dig that. I think it makes sense. And it fits right in line with the movie. Well, as a palate cleanser for our black fashions, do you have a blackimendation, which is just a recommendation about something for Biden about blackness that you think other black people need to be up on?
Okay, this should be my black fashion as well. But if you have not listened to Renaissance, like I didn't listen to Renaissance until 2 weeks ago, listen to it. I personally have a problem with new music. I listen to old stuff. So when somebody comes out with new music, it takes me a minute, especially if there's no like video or choreography for me to learn. It takes me a minute. And when I finally, for some reason, is like, oh, I'm going to listen to Renaissance, it changed everything. So if you don't, I'm a Beyonce fan. Don't hive, stay away. I am a Beyonce fan. So if you aren't a Beyonce fan or you haven't listened to it for any reason, you have to listen to it. I promise you, it'll change your life. I feel like my life has changed listening to that album on repeat multiple times. At this point, Alexa's like, can we play something else? Like, is there anything else you want to hear? Nope, there's not.
I mean, considering her tour, you might be the last one who hasn't heard that album. Like, the last one to get up on that album, you might be the final choreography.
The America Has a Problem choreography that keeps going around, I know it. I know Blue Ivy's whole, like, 8 count. I know all of that. So I feel like I have skipped into being forgiven because I have learned choreography.
You caught up.
I'm caught up.
You jumped in late, but you caught up, so you're all good. I think that works.
Yes.
I think that works. Well, look, and I'm spreading the good news. There you go. Spreading the good news. That's what we like to do in these black spaces. Spread the good news. Thank you for joining us here to talk poetic justice. Like I said, when I think of black movies, you're the first person that pops in my head when I think of discussing these things. So we're going to have to do more of these. Please tell people where they can keep up with your work, whatever you have going on. You got any projects coming or whatever. Like, please let people know what's going on with you.
Yes, I am at Bossy World on all platforms. I don't tweet as much as I used to, but I'm in there sometimes because I watch a lot of TV and I like to tweet about it. I'm currently working on book two. It's one of those things where I usually don't like what I'm working on. It's just part of the process, but I'm very, very excited about book two. I love it. And then there's also a project that I'm doing, which is more like an audio play, that I'm doing for a Nigerian media company that I'm also just, I love so much. So these two projects, one's coming out, Valentine's Day, 2024, and the other one, probably like 2025 or 26 or something like that. But look out for those. Like I, when I tell you that I like something that I wrote and made, listen to me.
Listen, I love that. And you know, for everybody listening, if you don't know, she is the author of I'm Telling the Truth, But I'm Lying, which I have told everybody. I even said to my wife early today, still one of the best books I think I've ever read. And I genuinely mean that. I tell you that every time, like I give it out for free. I've bought copies for other people just because I think people need to read that book. So yeah, I mean, I genuinely love that book. Like, it's really that good to me.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I do.
Yeah, always. So, you know, thank you for joining us here, Dear Culture. We appreciate you and your time. And for everybody listening, Dear Culture is an original podcast of the Real Black Podcast Network. It is hosted by myself, Panama Jackson. It is produced by Sasha Armstrong. And Regina Griffin is our director of podcasts. Thank you for listening. Have a black one.
We started this podcast to talk about not just what Black writers write about, but how.
Well, personally, it's on my bucket list to have one of my books banned. I know that's probably bad, but
ooh.
I think...
Ooh, spicy.
They were yelling, N-word, go home. And I was looking around for the N-word because I knew it couldn't be me because I was a queen.
But I'm telling people to quit this mentality of identifying ourselves by our work, to start to live our lives, and to redefine the whole concept of how we work and where we work and why we work in the first place.
My biggest strength throughout my career has been having incredible mentors, and specifically Black women.
I've been writing poetry since I was like 8. You know, I've been reading Langston Hughes and James Baldwin and Maya Angelou and so forth and so on since I was like a little kid.
Like the banjo was blackity black, right? Mm-hmm. For many, many, African. Many years. Yes. Everybody knew.
Because sometimes I'm just doing some Sam because I just want to do it.
An honor to be here. Thank you for doing the work that you're doing. Keep shining bright. And we like you said, we're going to keep writing Black.
As always, you can find us on the Griot app or wherever you find your podcasts.